Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturers with the finest knife treat ovens available. Find your next heat treat oven at evenheat-kiln.com.
Welcome, everybody, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, to Knife Talk. Thank you, everybody, for your awesome support. We've been getting a lot of really great questions on the Instagram direct message as well as in the forum. We've been, just tons of good feedback. As a thank you, I wanted to say that we got a... What do we got here, you guys? We got a... $50 off from our this week's sponsor this week, and that's from Soul Ceramics. That's S-O-U-L ceramics.com. You go in there. It's the promo code Knife Talk, correct?
Yes, yeah. And yeah. I've been looking at their prices. Their prices are already way below list price. Way low.
So they're already super low, and then they're offering another $50 off on even heat treating kiln. And if you're looking to definitely up your game and get more consistent at your heat treating, heat treating kiln is definitely a good way to go.
Yeah.
It's a good deal.
Good deal. I've just been looking. So the LB18, which is like almost the starter, an 18-inch kiln. Normal list price is just a shade under $2,000, so it's $1,900, and right. With their discount and also using the extra $50, you get 25% off. So you get it for $1,500, which is
That's amazing. That's what I have. I love it.
Very good, very good stuff. So what have we been up to this week? What's been going on?
Jeff, what are you doing? What have you been up to?
Well,
bud? I've been seeing those Sabor chef knives.
Slaving away. It hasn't been very inspiring. It's been a lot of hard work. So I've been hand sanding like a crazed maniac all week, and it's been, you know, hard work, a lot of hand sanding. But that's
I saw your time lapse video on the Knife Talk stories. That was pretty intense. Looked like a lot of hand sanding.
Well, yeah, you know, it's funny, you know, those time lapses, they seem like they're quick, but that was like a good hour and a half, hour and 15 minutes of just rough sanding to 220. So, you know, all of a sudden I watched it, I was just like, well, people think I'm going to do this so quick. It's not that, it's good amount of time. But in regards to Knife Talk, I threw up yesterday. Well, I didn't throw up, but I threw up onto the page the new New England School of Metalwork 2019 schedule. And I thought that was kind of a good little resource for people if they're looking to take classes and stuff like that.
Absolutely. And I know that we've talked about it before, at least Jeff and I, and I think Craig's also talked about it too, but just discussing like ways to get started. I'm just constantly peppered with how do I get started? And like Jeff has said many times before, taking a class, having somebody to coach you side by side is a great way to get started. And there are people teaching classes all over the country, but New England School of Metalwork is a great facility. I've actually taken a course there, and I just really highly suggest getting started. If you have the means, get started by taking a class.
Yeah, but I've got classes booked. Unfortunately, I can't go to the New England School of Metalwork.
Can we hear about your course? Can we hear about your courses?
Yeah, so it's happening in France. It's happening in January, but there is a link. So I've just bought I'm just in the middle of buying a hammer from your mate Sunset.
The best.
That's a good call.
Yes.
I love that guy. So, John Ariani is the best.
So I took your advice on, you know, the perfect hammer for a newcomer. So it's a 2.5 pound. Still unsure whether to go for a rounding hammer or with a peen, or, you know, with or without a peen. But yeah, I'm looking forward to receiving that pretty soon.
He's gonna take care of you.
For blade forging, a cross peen is definitely a good way to go. For helping to spread the material out. From what I understand, a lot of the blacksmiths really like the rounding hammers, but for bladesmithing, you really want a peen to help spread the material around, especially when you're pulling down the heel and drawing out the length of the blade. It's going to make a huge difference, because when you're hitting with a rounding face, it spreads the material in all directions, but when you hit with the cross peen, it's spreading it one of two directions, or only two directions, either up and down, essentially perpendicular to the the peen face.
Yes.
Is it a blacksmithing class or a bladesmithing class?
It's a blacksmithing class, but the second week, if you want to continue, which is a 5-day course, and if you want to go back for the second week, they concentrate more on blades. So I think they get the fundamentals down in that first week. And then, yeah, you're going to produce some knives. They reckon 3 knives in the second week. So it's
that's good.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun doing it in French because, you know, my French isn't too good. But
jeez.
You know, it's manual stuff. You copy, you know?
Yeah.
Yes.
Watch and learn.
I think I would probably agree with Mareko and say that you're going to get the most bang for your buck with a cross peen. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah. And it's your recommendation, so, you know, I'm looking forward to this hammer coming. It'll be cool.
You told me, and I already sent a message to John saying we got to make sure that, you know, I might end up sending you something a little extra, too.
Oh, he's going to sneak something into your package.
Well, I don't like, you know, you guys heat treat, you pull out your knives with pliers and stuff. We got to stop with that. We got to get you some tongs. I'm going to get you some pickup tongs. I made the decision that I'm going to just either make some or I'm probably going to just to get back into it, I'm going to make you some tongs and send you some tongs out. Amazing. I'm tired of seeing you with your vice grips pulling out with your hot gloves, with your dopey gloves and your vice grips pulling knives out of the oven. Stop it with that, everybody. Get yourself some tongs.
Yeah. I don't think you can have enough tongs.
Yeah. Isn't the community great? You've recommended a maker. I've bought something from him. You're sending a little something extra. It's all good. It's all good.
Well, that's how, you know, hopefully, for now, until we all collapse, until it turns into, like, anarchy.
Craig's Community Showcase.
Which brings us nicely to a showcase for a maker this week. And this week, it's... Unusually, he's not making chef knives. So most of the people that I follow, they're making knives for the kitchen. But this guy isn't. So it's on Instagram, he's number one Jimmy Pie. So N-O, the number one Jimmy Pie. And he's making, well, I suppose, mainly bushcraft knives. But again, they're so clean. They're so precise. It's real beautiful work. And he does these interesting handles using wraps, and he wax coats these wraps and so on. And they're just beautiful knives. So I've taken a lot of inspiration, even though they're not the sort of style that I'd go with. They're beautiful knives. So that's number one, Jimmy Pie. I went to check him out. Yeah, his name is just Jim. And that's all he's listed as. So I don't know his full name. But it's number one, as in N-O, and then the digit one, Jimmy Pie. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. But go and check out his work. It's lovely. It's clean. It's precise. He has quite a few followers already. So he's certainly known within the community. But I think it'll be good for everybody to take a look because it really is beautiful work.
I went to go check
number
him out.
Jimmy Pie.
Because I saw him in the notes, and he actually has a private account though, so you can't just pop over and see.
Really?
So I couldn't see anything.
Well, look what we have here.
But you can definitely push the
gated community. This episode is Craig's gated community. Gated community progress. I don't know what
a mistake to make it. I didn't realize. But why would people have a closed account? That's bizarre. That's, you know. Anyway,
I think it might see his work.
He's gonna be like, why are all these bots requesting me?
Exactly. Jimmy, open up your Instagram.
Jimmy Pie, here you are. Here we are. I'm talking to you from the past. This is why you're getting a lot of bots. It's from us.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Enjoy. Enjoy your new notoriety.
Also, by the way,
change your settings, goddamn you.
By the way, this past week I've been working on some SIA work that's been a huge pain in my ass. We were talking earlier about what we've been up to. And I'm working on an integral saya, a wooden carved saya that covers the integral bolster of the chef's knife, which has been a huge pain in my ass. It's not easy. It's fun. Hard. Definitely something to learn. But
Is that using the same wood as the handle then?
Yeah. So the wood and the saya are all made out of one solid piece of material. I split the handle material off and then sent that out to be stabilized so that the grain comes back. And when everything's put together, the grain ideally flows all together really nicely with very little gapping except for you know, where the saw curve was from splitting it off. But yeah, it's been a serious challenge. It's something I've been wanting to do for 3 or 4 years now, and pretty much since I first made my first wooden saya. But haven't really thought, or I didn't really know how to approach it, and then I just started whittling away and kind of figured it out.
What kind of wood is it you're using?
It's curly koa. It was it's actually wood that was earmarked as a reject piece, but once I got into the block, it's super, super nice, really nice curl. It's an irregular curl, which I really like. I don't like the super uniform curls. I like the irregular kind of crinkle curls, and or what are the compression curls, is what they're referred to. And yeah, so this has got some really nice figure in there, as well as some sapwood, as well as heartwood. So you got some blonde koa in there as well.
When you sent this stuff out to be stabilized, did you already drill the hole and rough it out, or did you send the block?
Yeah, I sent a block. So I sent the block to K&G Knife Maker Supplies.
They're the best.
And I've sent a lot of material to them over the years, and that was always my first concern, is like, is this going to make it all the way in? And I've had no problems. I've split blocks into scales, had no issue, made all kinds of solid block handles out of them. So yeah, K&G does a pretty good job, stable, and they've been doing it for a long time. So they got a pretty solid system down.
They actually, a couple years ago, I made some handles with wine barrel wood, and I sent it out to them, and I prepped it all. I cut everything down to the scale size, you know, a little bit thicker than scales, like 3/8, 1/2 inch.
Sure.
And then when I called them, they said, "Well, you know, this is pretty, you know, wet." And I said, "Well, how long do you think it's going to take to dry out?" He said, "Well, we're in Arizona. We'll just stick it up in the rafters, and after a week, it'll be dry." They are actually really awesome to work with in terms of getting stuff stabilized. K&G is great. Yeah. They're in Arizona. Yeah.
And I suppose the difference between a good stabilizing system and a bad one is the suck power, isn't it? I suppose, you know, whether you're going to get that, you know, fully into the material, or quite often, yeah, when I first started out stabilizing,
all suck power.
Yes, when I first started stabilizing, you'd cut into a block and you'd see the middle hadn't quite, you know, it hasn't quite penetrated enough. But thankfully sorted that out. But it's So if you're going to try stabilizing yourself, get yourself a really good pump. I've seen some videos where people saying you can use bicycle pumps and you can, you know, they're not going to work.
No, man.
They're not going to work.
You got to get that suck. You got to get that good suck. Well, when I was doing the talking about, I did a couple live feeds a number of months ago about stabilizing. I tried to keep it real simple. I said the most important things are a long dry, big suck, deep soak, easy bake. That's the four principles to stabilizing your wood. Big sucks.
Well, in some of these bigger companies, another process they add to the whole stabilizing system is pressure. So that soak time, they do it usually under pressure as well. So to really, instead of just ambient atmospheric pressure, they're really cramping down and then turning around and sucking in any extra they can. And yeah, so
yeah,
it's just they have super high pressure equipment that does the job really well. And efficiently.
So for those who don't know what stabilizing is, it's basically taking a piece of wood, which is it's porous. It's got these tiny little air holes in them. And, you know, in there, you know, especially if it's for a kitchen, you can get germs in there. You can get the water, the steam can get in there and damage your handle. So what you do, you take a piece of wood. First of all, you dry it out. And, you know, people have different ways. I know, Jeff, you put yours in your even heat, don't you, to dry out first?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a sort of drying out cupboard, which is above a radiator, which keeps, you know, a really sort of dry atmosphere in there. I pull them out; they go into a hard resin, and you know, people use cactus juice. I use 100 term. There's a few different versions of this resin. You put it into a vacuum chamber, so it's in resin in a vacuum chamber,
submerged,
held down under. Yeah.
The level of your resin.
Yeah. So the vacuum then will pull out all the air that's in the wood. And it's amazing to see all these bubbles coming into the resin from the wood. When you shut, you know, this can go on for hours, overnight, or however long you want. The longer, the better. When you turn off the vacuum, all of that resin is then sucked into the wood, into, where, you know, those porous areas where the was previously air. Then what you do, you let it soak over time, and then you put it in a low oven just to sort of bake. And that creates this wood, which is almost a bit of a hybrid between a wood and a plastic, because it polishes up beautifully. It avoids any damage from steam or water. Very safe to be in a kitchen because it's very hygienic. There's none of these little pores.
Yeah, it's more dense too.
Yeah, the weight can be crazy. The weight difference.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah.
But wood is still a biological thing. Wood still, you know, it's not like, it's not turning it into G10.
Yeah.
Wood is still a biological thing that can deteriorate, but it gives you so many more options.
Hmm. Have you guys ever used any of these sort of hybrid handles that you see where they take a piece of wood, but they also use maybe a colored resin and then, you know, you have the two in together? Have you used any
of
them?
Absolutely. That's my boy, Deranged Donkey.
Yeah, I haven't played with that yet.
That's my boy, Deranged Donkey. He's great.
I've never used it. I always wonder about the bond between that sort of the plasticky stuff and the wood.
Yeah. Well, it's you know what? I have a lot of experience with it because I use it a lot, and there's a couple things I will say. One thing is I generally don't use that material for handle scales because I feel the same way. I did use it for one set of handle scales, and it worked out great. It was nice and thick. But generally, I use them for hidden tang knives, and there's a couple things, because what happens is they'll take a burl, and he'll stabilize the burl, and he'll stick it in a little chamber, and then he'll drop in, I think it's called alumilite, different colors of alumilite.
Yeah.
And what it'll do is, if you have that burl, it's like coral, and what happens is the alumilite, it bonds, it's not like a flat joint. It's like your fingers are tied together. It's so well bound. And I haven't had a, pardon me, I haven't had a problem yet. But one thing that you should think about is when you're using that stuff, especially for WAH style handles, which I use them for, is you want to make sure that there's enough of the wood to hide your tang. Because if you get that hybrid stuff, if it's clear, like some of the stuff, I know my buddy Fell Knives, he gets the stuff that's super clear, and it's great because you can embed like Lego men in there or bugs or something. But if you don't have enough wood for your exposed tang, it's going to shoot through and you're going to see it. That's the other reason why I don't use it for scales, because I'm always afraid you're going to see through it to a certain degree and you're going to see all the bullshit inside your handle. So what
Stop
I try to do is
hiding your bullshit
to,
in there.
What I try to do is, well, you don't want to see all, you know, you don't want to see the insides of your handle. So what I try to do is, and I've talked to Deranged Donkey, he's great. His name's Chris. He's awesome. When I've bought stuff from him, I usually try to get stuff that's not clear unless there's enough wood so I can hide the tang. Or what I'll do is I'll get the stuff that's not clear. I'll get the stuff that's like, I guess it's opaque. And then if you kind of go through the wood and it kind of dips into the alumilite, you're not going to see the exposed tang. I love that stuff. People are crazy for it.
It would be good to talk about this in a future episode, actually, because I've got a bunch of knives coming up where I need to put stuff in resin, so it needs to be clear. So there'll be a liner, so you won't actually see the tangs. A customer I'm working with, they want something cast in resin to be in the handle.
Oh, there's your trick, Jeff. You put a white liner underneath the clear scale, hides the tang.
You'll still see the glue. I've been down this road, my brother. I got that Ghost JG 10. I know what happens. You'll still see any kind of glue or crazy glue or whatever you're doing to kind of, when you smush them together. It's like if you're in science class and you're trying to make a slide and you kind of smush some gluck together to look at some blood or something like that, and it kind of spreads out. It's the same thing. If it's clear, you're going to see whatever the bond is. And if you, God forbid, you have some dirt on the inside of your liner, you're going to see that, and it's going to drive you crazy. And you just got to be careful.
You just got to tighten it. You got to tighten up your process. Tighten it up.
Yeah.
Well, then you're going to see, if it's clear, then you're going to see the Corby bolts or your rivets or your whatever. See, when you drill through that clear stuff, you're going to see the unless you're going to mirror finish the inside hole, and you're still going to see that pin.
It's true.
You know what I'm saying?
True, yeah. Yeah. Some sort of hybrid system I need, I think. Yeah. I'll look into that a bit more, but perhaps I'll speak with Deranged Donkey and see what they suggest there as well.
The best part of Deranged Donkey is his name. because you when you talk to him, I in the beginning I buy a lot of stuff from him. I like him, but I like referring to him as Deranged Donkey. So when I have these customer meetings, they're like, "Well, what do you do?" Well, you know, I got this stuff from Deranged Donkey. I'm like, "Yeah, Deranged Donkey. I love it." He's gonna change his name. I think his name is really poor. Porcasso, P-O-U-R-C-A-S-S-O, but on Instagram he's Deranged Donkey.
Right. An open account on Instagram, that's a rare thing.
Jeff
Investigates. Jeff Investigates.
We've got a Jeff Investigates this week. Surely.
I don't know about that. I thought we're doing, hey man, can I ask you a question?
Ah, you mean,
hey man, can I ask you a question?
Oh my god. Is that John Travolta? You got John Travolta? Reese?
You gotta guess who this is. I'll play it again.
Hey man, can I ask you a question?
It's supposed to be Jay-Z.
It's supposed to be Jay. It may be Jay-Z.
That was Jay-Z?
We've got a budget on the show. It may well be Jay-Z.
I thought that was John Travolta from Saturday Night Fever. One more time.
Hey man, can I ask you a question?
That's fucking John Travolta. You got ripped. You got John Travolta, Jay-Z. One more time.
You gotta listen to more hip hop, brother.
Yeah. Get Travolta out of your head. Get Travolta. Think of Jay-Z.
Okay.
Hey man, can I ask you a question?
fucking John Travolta.
Okay, I think the listeners have had enough.
I must be
four times as good.
That's John Travolta. No one's ever going to think that's Jay-Z. All right, it's fine. I liked it though. I'm very impressed. Very impressed that you got Jay-Z to
appear
to
on
get
the show
in the podcast. Yeah. Congratulations. Yeah.
Impressive.
So, hey man, can I ask you a question? That's good. So, I just. The last couple episodes, I did Jeff Investigates, and I was going on and on and on and investigating. So I thought I'd just, you know, open it up to questions that people had. And I thought I would ask you guys you could answer these questions, and then I'll pipe in every so often. So the first, hey, man, can I ask you a question, comes from...
Hey, man, can I ask you a question?
All right.
That's pretty funny.
All right. The first, hey man, can I ask you a question, is from at Hammer and Tyne on Instagram. That's Dan Almquist. He says, seems like so many knife makers are concerned with balancing the knife at the pinch point. Like it's the chef's knife only characteristic. They never talk about the belly / rocker or the overall shape of the blade when the cutting actually happens. After spending 20 years in the kitchen using European and Japanese knives, I think the way the knife cuts and handles is far more important than being balanced in my pinch. Blade heavy isn't negative. And before you answer, we have to finally make the decision. Are people saying chef's knife or is it a chef knife? I say it's a chef's knife, not a chef knife.
I'd say chef knife. It's a thing, isn't it? It's a chef knife.
Well, it's a chef's knife.
The chef uses it, so that it is the chef's knife, but the thing itself is a chef knife, surely.
I'm with Jeff.
Chef's knife.
I say chef's knife, possessive chef. Because...
Hey man, can
very specific.
Well, I've been outvoted. It's a chef's knife. It's a chef's knife. Okay, two to one.
So answer the question. Hey man, answer the question.
I think I agree. I think there's too much emphasis put on the pinch point being balanced, and you see these pictures of people balancing a knife on a pencil and all these things. It's going to depend on what the knife's being used for. The only example I can give is the recent steak knives that I've been working on. Steak knives, I find generally are just too light. Particularly if you've got a big hunk of meat. So the steak knives that I've just then had a very heavy belly on them, so the weight is a bit more forward, which is just helping you cut. But I don't really. Obviously, a knife needs to be comfortable, but with regards to balance at the pinch point, I don't know.
Is it possible? Because one thing that I zoned in on is his talk about the belly and the rocker. So basically, the radius of your blade, your cutting edge, is the radius from the heel to the tip. And in regards to the way you use a steak knife, that makes a lot of sense too, because a lot of people, when they cut with their steak knife or something, you're actually tip to heel. You're not using your heel to the tip. And with a chef's knife, I put in a lot of my chef's knives. The radius, I like a big radius because the way I cut and the way my friends cut is they're rolling it on that heel. And sometimes with more of a radius in your edge, you're going to have that more ergonomic way to cut.
Hmm. Yeah, I think when it comes to the balance point and talking about balance point, that's a pretty easy thing to really for people to talk about, because I think so many of the other aspects are very subjective. This guy really, really likes the way it sounds like a blade heavy, curvy European style edge. But some people want a straighter edge. Some people want even more curve in their edge.
But European knives aren't. European knives are more full. I think when he says European knives, he's talking full tang knives, which are going to be more. They're going to be more balanced because there's more steel in the handle, right?
Mm. I interpreted that as more blade heavy because, in my experience with, especially like a Wusthof chef's knife. Because it's a European stainless, it needs a little extra material to kind of support that lead cutting edge. So I feel like they have a tendency to be a little bit more blade heavy, which is totally fine.
That's also an integral knife. Integral knife is going to be more blade heavy.
And so I think a lot of these things are super subjective, and I think too many people get very prescriptive and say it needs to be a flat cutting edge or it needs to be super curvy so it can do a rock chop. I think the benefit of having so many different makers is that they make knives in so many different ways, and that means that there's going to be a knife that suits just about everybody. I think, again, it's a bad move to get too prescriptive about how a knife should be, because ultimately it comes down to different people. Like Jeff, you're a pretty tall dude, but I'm like 5 or 6 inches shorter than you. And so when I'm standing at a counter doing prep work, we're working from different angles. And so I'm going to want to.
You got those elbows up. You got those elbows up.
Exactly. No, they're, yeah, exactly.
You got those elbows up. It's on your tippy toes.
I'm going to need a different knife than you're going to want. And maybe you like, because of the way you hold the knife or the way you use the knife, you're going to want something that's a little more blade heavy, or maybe you want something that's a lighter blade, and I might want the blade heavy. I think it's the balance point is an easy thing to point at and show, but it's not necessarily the end all be all of what makes a great knife. I think what makes a great knife for any individual is what feels good and is comfortable for them. That's it.
Yeah. And I think you said it well last week, Mareko, when you said that get your knives out to as many chefs as you can, and you're soon going to then see that there's no perfect knife for everybody, you know?
Right. No, and hey, anybody
man,
who
can
tries
I ask
to...
you a question?
sorry, Jeff.
Hey man, can I ask you a question?
All right. I'm sorry for interrupting.
No, keep going.
This one is from Aaron Maliza. Aaron's he's a blacksmith and bladesmith out in not too far from where you're from. I think he's from the Northwest. He's Northwest. He says, specifically about food release, can S straight or convex grind release food as well as an S grind? Wait a second. Let me read this go. All right. So specifically about food release, can a straight or convex grind release food as well as an S grind or a compound grind? How important is the food release? I suppose it doesn't matter much to a butcher, but it might to someone slaying onions and celery all day. Food release.
So to me, I hear this talk all the time, especially because I put an S grind, also known as a compound grind, on pretty much all my knives as a standard, unless somebody requests a different style grind, because that's just what they like. For me, my biggest goal is to try to grind a blade so it reduces the friction, the actual cutting friction. I come from a production background when I was working in kitchens, so that means blasting through food all day.
You mean the performance? You mean that instead of friction, you're saying that the way the performance and how it's going through the food.
Yeah, so the actual friction when the blade is in contact with the food and cutting through the food, depending on the thickness of the, especially at the lead cutting edge and the geometry of the knife, that's going to determine how much friction there is when you're cutting through it. And I don't give a shit about food release. You know, I have a lot of customers who really do care about that, and I hope I'm not alienating them. But the S grind does help with food release, but for more than anything, it's helping to reduce drag or cut friction when you're cutting through stuff. So there's less resistance when you're cutting through stuff, and resistance. Therefore you're not working as hard to cut through the material.
And it's not creating like a suction cup on your knife.
Right. And you know, but that's not the only grind that does that. Like a lot of different grinds do that. And it ultimately, I think, comes down to the geometry. Like the last half inch or 5/8 of an inch leading to the cutting edge really makes a difference in how well something cuts into the food. And it, whether it's a convex grind, a flat grind, an S grind, or whatever, you know, that's really what's going to make the difference. For me, I don't care about food release because, again, production environment, all I care about is blasting through food. And if I'm working with a knife that makes it hard to blast through food, onions, carrots, celery, cucumbers, whatever, all day long, I don't want to use that knife. I want a knife that's going to create the least amount of drag, least amount of resistance, so I can get the work done quicker.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Manny, can I ask you a question?
Jesus.
Hey, man, can I ask you a question?
I didn't think I was going to like this as much as I do. So this one is from Backyard Workshop. That's Jared Wilson. With all things equal in terms of thickness and edge geometry of a standard 8-inch chef's knife, how close is the performance between carbon steel and stainless steel? And then he said this. All right, so basically he's saying, what do you think the real difference is between carbon steel and stainless steel? And then he said this. He said, I like my carbon steel, but the knives I've given to my family get absolutely trashed. Just wondering if I should bite the bullet and make some stainless stuff instead and fork out some cash for someone to do the heat treatment for me.
I think
I'm interested in this answer too myself, because I do a bit of carbon, I do a bit of stainless, but with regards to, you know, performance, you know, I think a lot of it is to do with how easy it is to sharpen as opposed to the actual performance of a knife. But I'm interested to hear what you guys have to say about that.
Well, for me, when I first started making knives, I was making bushcraft knives with Matt Paul, and we were forging forging carbon steel knives. And then when I started to make knives for people, it was really for my friends and my family or people that I know, and people wanted the knives, right? But the problem was when I started to make the carbon steel knives, they were just like, yo, I love this knife, but what the fuck is happening to it? And it got to the point where I was like, people wanted stainless steel because they wanted the ease of the maintenance. So I really tried to say, all right, look, you're I have to make it happen. I got to give people what they feel comfortable with and what they want. So I started doing more stainless steel knives. And generally speaking, a lot of people, especially who are not new to knife making or they don't know, there's once in a while you'll get someone say, I mean, my customers are different than Mareko's customers. And a lot of times, once in a while, I'll get someone to say, I'm a carbon steel man. I only use carbon steel. But generally speaking, when I talk to my customers, they say, I don't understand the difference. So when usually my rule of thumb is I explain it to them, but I'll say to them, I don't want you to get something that you're nervous about maintaining. You're going to pay a lot of money for something that you're worried about. I would rather you have something that you feel comfortable with. My prices are not the point where when you buy one, you're going to start sweating. You know, sometimes you buy something super expensive and you get nervous. Sometimes you're just like, I hope I can maintain this correctly. So generally speaking, most of my knives are stainless steel. I think that if your edge geometry is correct and it's right and it's sharp and it's thin and it's good, I think you're going to get very similar performance. However, I've done a lot of carbon steel knives recently, and they cut better. They're better. They're just better. But you know, you got to live with it. It's like, you know, you just don't go out to the pet store and buy a dog and then say, here you go, here's your new, giving you a gift of a dog and now you got to feed it. Some people don't want to do that.
I've got a video up on my website, so when people ask that question about carbon or stainless, It's a knife care video where it explains, you know, the care that would go involved with a carbon knife compared to a stainless. So most customers who, you know, they may be on the fence before will come back and say they want a stainless.
And so I think if two knives are side by side and they're dimensionally all the same, but one is carbon, one is stainless, I think on average, the carbon is going to perform better than the stainless. Yes. And what I mean by performance is just it's going to take a fine edge. It's going to keep, but more than anything, it's going to keep that fine edge a little better than the stainless. But when it gets to the some of the kind of more exotic stainlesses, they hold an edge just as well as a carbon. But those materials are they're 10x more expensive to use than most other stainless materials. But when it comes to like his comment about the carbon knives getting trashed, I think the issue there is a lack of understanding and education and about the maintenance that goes into it. And a lot of people think, oh, especially when I'm talking to people, like all my knives I make are carbon steel. And so they're like, oh, but aren't they way more high maintenance? They're going to be a pain in the ass. I'm like, look, do you have cast iron at your home? And they're like, yeah, oh yeah, I love my cast iron. My cast iron is great. It was my great grandmother's. I was like, okay, when you're done using your cast iron, you don't just throw it in a sink full of soap and water, do you? And you're like, no way, it would destroy it. I was like, that's the same thing with carbon steel.
They're lying to you. They're lying to you. They're lying to you. You're crazy. They don't know about their grandparents' cast iron. They're throwing in the sink and hoping someone else does it.
But I liken it to maintaining and taking care of cast iron. Cast iron is actually more maintenance than taking care of a carbon steel knife. Unless I've cut up oily food or raw food, if it's fruits and vegetables, I just rinse off my carbon steel knife, wipe it dry, and put it back away. It literally takes about 25 seconds.
But Jared, his family doesn't care.
And but that's the problem. It's a lack of education, lack of appreciation.
Do you shave every day?
Fuck no.
Well, there you go. There's lack of education right there. Do you take a shower every day?
Oh, definitely not.
Well, there you go. That's a lack of education right there. You're not maintaining your shit right there. I think that, you know, look, I don't, sometimes when I have my car, I don't get the oil changed at, you know, 2,500. People have to live their lives. A lot of these people are just preparing their breakfast or their lunch for their kids. You know, they're cutting the, you know, so I just think that, you know, people are, you know, you can't, I don't like mowing the lawn. I hate mowing the lawn. I fucking hate it to the point where my wife says, hey, it'd be great if you mowed the lawn. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ, the mowing the lawn. I got to learn how to, you know, yeah, I'd have to figure something out. I'm thinking about ripping off that lawn and putting goddamn pebbles down or something.
You get that Floridian, what is it? Pumice stone rock front yard or backyard.
Hey, man, can I ask you a question?
Hey, man, can I ask you a question?
You know what? I thought I was going to hate this. Now I like it. All right, this question, hey, man, can I ask you a question, is from our friend Jay Spake, Jeremy Spake.
Yeah, baby.
Jeremy Spake is a great guy. He actually sent me this question that was so long, I had to write to him like, dude, you've got to put this into one sentence because we're never going to get there. All right, so here's his question. And then what we're going to do is we're going to ask one more big question, and then we're going to do rapid fire questions. So Jeremy Spake asks, hey, man, can I ask you a question? In terms of a basic education on the common knife profiles for the kitchen, what are the differences and similarities? What makes a French pattern? What makes a German? What makes a Gyoto? Or what makes a Santuco? And let me tell you, the first edit of this question was not that short.
You know, the easiest answer for this is a book that I have, and it goes into the differences between various production knives, various custom knives, and so on. And it's simply called Knife. The book is
That's
called
a good
Knife.
Book.
That book.
By Tim Hayward, available on Amazon, wherever you get your books. Really good knife. Really good book, rather. And he lists the differences between, you know, French patterns and, you know, what a German pattern would look like and those differences between them. So that would be my first recommendation. Get that book, which is Knife by Tim Hayward.
I've always been interested in the fact that, you know, the Japanese style knives and the European style knives really are these kind of two styles that are the most popular. And I love the fact that, like, old school Japanese knives, they decided, hey, you know what, we're going to start making knives like the Europeans. And they were making knives and they were trying to, like, I don't know if they were translating, like, when they make, when you hear people talk about a petty knife, the funny thing is it's spelled P-E-T-T-Y, but that comes from, it originally comes from the French petite. Hmm. And they were trying to make it happen and it turned into the petty knife. I always think that the kind of like the way these kind of different variations of knives, they kind of, when they kind of meet up and merge and kind of, you know, work together, how the similarities go and how they kind of hybridize. I've always liked that.
I would say, generally speaking, when it comes to profiles, a German style chef's knife comes more to a point. So I would like, I have a knife that I call European chef's knife, but I would, if I were to be more specific, I would say that it's more of a German pattern European style chef's knife because it comes to more of an even, almost kind of spear type point. It does have a little,
excellent.
It has a little bit of more of a belly for rock chopping on the cutting edge side, but otherwise it almost comes to an equal spear point. And then when it comes to a French chef's knife, the point, it has kind of a bull nose out towards the tip, and I think part of that design feature comes from sometime in that whatever, I can't remember, a few hundred years back, but they couldn't have points on their knives because people were using them as weapons, so they thought by blunting the nose, that would help solve that problem. But you can
still, so just to back up a hair, yeah. What you were saying, coming to a point, that's French style is where the spine radiuses from the heel at the top, the spine of the knife, it radiuses down, kind of like very like similar to the radius of the edge, so it's more like a willow.
Yeah, and I think a French pattern would have a bit more of a belly to it as well.
Right.
You know, so it's not that thinner, sharp edge of the German pattern. It's just got more of a rocker to it, too.
Well, then that's funny also, that you say that, because when the sabatiers that I've seen, especially some of the old ones, like 100-year-old, they have almost no belly. They're almost straight edge, where the German style has more of a belly. And then, of course, the Japanese Gyudo is kind of a take on the French chef's knife because of the popularity of the sabatier. But there's the point when it finally meets at a point, from what I understand, it's supposed to be below center. So if you were to rest the blade on a cutting surface, whatever the height at the heel is, when you bring that height down to the tip should be below the halfway point or just at the halfway point, but no higher.
And the spine is straight. Until the last inch.
And then it just drops down, yeah, to kind of a blunted point.
And you know what the funny thing is about these, you know, back in the day with those cowboys in Argentina, those gauchos, the traditional gaucho knife came from, they were stealing French chef knives and putting them in holsters and running out onto their horses. that traditional gaucho knife was, you know, came from French chef knives.
That's interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah, there you go. Well, hey, can I ask you a question?
Hey, man, can I ask you a question?
I love interrupting with, hey, can I ask you a question?
We're getting our money's worth out of this jingle.
Oh, boy, did you do a good job. Congratulations. All right, hey, man, can I ask you a question? This is from Coulter Knives. This is an interesting question, and we're going to have to tiptoe around a little bit, but I think we got it. Where is the best place to purchase Sanmai if you're not forging and only work with stock removal? I've asked knife makers in the States to help me with this, but I've yet to find a reliable source to purchase from.
I'm out with this one. I've never used Sanmai, so I'm out.
All right, I make my own. Why? He makes his own. So we know what Sanmai is. Sanmai is generally speaking, it's a carbon steel core with the stainless steel jacket, right?
Cladding on either side. It's also sometimes mild steel or wrought iron, but
right. It's basically you need to look for something called, it should be double clad. And if you go to the New Jersey Steel Baron, they do sell double clad steel. and the double-clad steel for, you know, chef knives, which you're talking about. And basically what it is the core is 52-100, and the stainless is 410. And they do sell lengths, but it's called double-clad, and let's just keep it at that.
Okay. There are like some legal issues. There have been some conversations in the last couple of years.
I'll keep it very easy.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I used to like to go to McDonald's to get a McRib. And I loved a McRib. And a McRib was one of these pressed bullshit pork sandwiches, barbecued pork sandwiches with barbecue sauce and onions and pickles on a bun. And my dad and I used to love it, and we used to love it, and we used to love it. And I would go out to places and I would say, I really want to get a McRib. Where can I get a McRib? And there was nobody selling McRibs. And the reason why is because McRibs were made by McDonald's. So San Mai may or may not be from McDonald's. You get what I'm saying? This is not something you can... I think I'm speaking in a way that's very clear to understand.
And then yes. This is,
like you were saying, that there are legal issues, but if you're looking for San Mai from other places or something... similar, if you're looking for a McRib at Wendy's, look for a barbecued pork sandwich with pickles and onions.
You should call it tri-layer steel.
Yeah.
Well, they call it double clad. Most of them call it double clad, and I know they sell it as double clad.
I mean, it's
for
Japanese,
those who don't know,
meaning three
what is the
layers.
Advantage? What is the advantage of having a clad knife?
Well, especially if it has a stainless steel jacket, it's ease of maintenance.
And if you're and you wonder and you say to yourself, whoa, a carbon steel core with stainless steel outside. Well, I know that stainless steel heat treats at a different temperature than carbon steel. When you're heat treating double clad, you're heat treating the core, because the core is going to be your edge. Your edge is not going to be the cladding, because when you make that bevel, that stainless steel is going to be ground away. So you're going to be left with the core. So you want to heat treat to what the core needs, not what the stainless steel needs. Leave the jacketing alone. Just clad to the core, okay?
Gotcha.
Now, we're going to do rapid-fire one-sentence answers. So, hey, man, can I ask you a question?
Do I need to play this jingle every time
fuck
now?
Yes,
am I
you
doing
do.
That?
One time. Just fuck yeah, just one time.
Hey, man, can I ask you a question?
All right.
I wonder how many listeners we've lost by now.
None. They love it. They love this shit. One, that's it. You don't have to answer. Okay, so here's two guys asked this. It's MCHL_GPPRT. You're killing me. Don't ask another question. And RC_Saunier. They both asked, what steel would you recommend for a kitchen knife? One sentence.
I've been trying Niolox this week. So it's a stain resistant tool. It's got really good edge holding and decent toughness, and it contains niobium, which I haven't got a clue what that is, but it's almost like a chromium. So it's a hybrid between a carbon and a stainless knife. That's me.
Not one sentence, but that's a good answer. Go ahead, Mareko. One sentence.
I'd say, as long as you take a second to just explain to people the performance benefits of high carbon would be the way to go.
That's a good one sentence. I say 440C. All right, next question from Lord Torin. Lord Torin. One sentence, guys. What's the most important thing to look for in a chef knife? Craig!
Speak to the maker. Explain the kind of stuff you'll be doing with the knife, and they'll be able to make you a knife that's specific to you. Because there's not one knife that's going to work for everybody.
Those three sentences, but I get you. Mareko, what's the most important thing to look for in a knife?
Edge retention.
There, see that? Look how fast. All right, I'm not even... I say just give whatever the fuck you want. That's my answer. All right, next question is from four guys. This is a good one. So JR_Palm and Marlboro Handcraft and Y_Customs and Dupree Knives all asked, how thin should the edge be before sharpening? Craig.
Slicers, almost wire edge, anything more, sort of 0.2 mil, which I suppose the Americans 10 to 20 thou, I suppose.
Nice. Mareko, go ahead.
I would agree, generally speaking, about maybe 10 thousandths of an inch.
All right. My answer is thin. All right. Next question. This is from some son of a bitch named Chop Knives. Beef with cheese. Beef with cheese, good or bad? Craig.
Good. Good. You guys have cheeseburgers or plastic cheese. We have a good cheese with a good steak.
That's not one sentence. One sentence is over. All right, Mareko. Beef with cheese, good or bad?
Delicious. Good.
All right. Here's the correct answer. Cheeseburgers and Philly cheesesteaks only. Everything else, you're out. That's my answer for that. Next question. This is from at Hartman1128. Is there a brand of knife you can get at the store that will be compatible to a custom knife? Craig.
No. A custom knife can be tailored to your exact style, whereas a shop-bought knife can't.
Nice. Mareko?
My answer is that there are many that will certainly cut, but no. They are not compatible to chef's knife.
My answer is pay up, motherfucker. All right, next question. This is from at Pocono John. This should be quick. Do you recommend an electric knife sharpener? And if so, which one? Craig?
No.
Good. Mareko?
Nope.
Good. Me? No. All right, that was the best one yet. All right, so the answer is no, Pocono John. You're fucked. All right, second to last from RK3DVM. Is it possible to have a multi-purpose oyster knife that can be used for EDC, Craig?
One sentence, yep.
Yep.
No rules, hyphen. But I would imagine you'd have some...
What are you asking, Siri? Are you recording to Siri? Go ahead.
You'd have thick stock on an oyster knife, comma. If you want something small as an EDC, comma, maybe a little kiridashi would suit better. Full stop.
Very good job. Beautifully all right, Mareko, what's your answer?
I'm going to say no, because you don't want an edge on your oyster knife.
Good answer. My answer is yes. It's called a Swiss Army knife. They were opening them with Swiss Army knives forever. There you go. That's the answer. And the last question from Swift Knives UK. Is it okay to put a K-tip on everything?
Go nuts. Develop your own style. Go nuts.
Yep, I agree. K-tips exist already before they became popular on many different styles of knives, especially Japanese influences.
I say fine. All right, we're done with that. All my segment is over. No more. Hey, man, can I ask you a question? I did like it.
She's out. I like that we kept the fart again.
I'm glad we kept the fart.
As soon as you get her out of the hospital, you put a mic in her face. So funny.
Okay. So the last couple of weeks we've been talking about, or I've been talking about, let's see, what process by which to make knives, and then what style of knives you want to start with. But I think I needed to actually back up, and one of the first things you really should be considering is PPE, which is short for personal protection equipment. And that means eye protection, respirators, hearing protection, wearing an apron. It just depends. Wearing gloves also, making sure you're wearing cotton clothing, leather boots. These are all things you want to think about before you even start standing behind an anvil or next to a grinder and thinking you're going to start doing some work, because the reality is all of the equipment, whether you have a super well set up shop or a janky ass setup in your shed, they'll all get the job done, but all the tools want to hurt you the second you're not paying attention. If you're not taking the steps to protect yourself, you can get really messed up. So when it comes to eye protection, I've tried all kinds of stuff, regular eye protection, like glasses, safety glasses to goggles. Ultimately, I had to settle on a full on face shield because I got a round face, 'cause I'm half Samoan. And I'm a little overweight. Throw that in.
Jeez
there.
Jeez Louise. Anything else?
Yeah. And I, love long walks on the beach, but anyways, I have to use a whole face shield because, stuff was always bouncing in my eyes no matter what. And then next, hearing protection, over ear, inner ear. I think it just comes down to your personal preference, but protecting your hearing is a really good call. Respirator. I use a 3M respirator. It's a quick release. You can get it off Amazon. I can't remember what it's called exactly, but I'll link it up in the Instagram stories and on the Knife Talk Instagram. But it's quick release, so if you need to sneeze for whatever reason, you can pop it off and sneeze outside of your mask instead of inside of your mask. Or if you need to talk to somebody, it also makes it easier to talk to somebody.
Can I tell you something real quick about respirators? Whatever you do, when a good song comes on, don't sing into the respirator. I had Angel of Harlem came on the radio, and I was going full blast singing Angel of Harlem. And I swear to God, my eyes started to get red, and I almost fucking passed out because I couldn't push the air out as fast as the oxygen was coming in. I swear to God, I started getting heart palpitations from fucking Angel of Harlem. So don't sing in your fucking respirator. Learn your lesson.
You need to change your filters out.
Unless you've got a respirator like mine, which is one of these these power cap kind of respirators where it's a full face shield and you have the filters across the top.
It's a positive pressure. I want one of those.
Yeah.
So it's pumping air into the face shield. You have like a little gasket, like a cloth gasket that goes around your face. And so it's kind of sealing it off passively. And then it's pumping air in through the top of the bill of the cap. And it creates a positive pressure environment, so air leaves the mask, but nothing is getting in.
Yeah, it's nice, cool air shot down your face. There's nothing tight across your mouth and nose. You can breathe completely normally.
Yeah,
they're great, and they've also got some sort of protection factor on the actual screen itself. So you know, if anything were to fly up, just you know, a face shield. They work really well, really, really well. Battery operated, lasted about 7 or 8 hours. So it's going to give you a full day of grinding, really.
Love it.
One thing I'd like to add to this is perfect, is, and this is falls into something I've been interviewing people to work for me. And the one thing that I stress, and this is something that it's similar to PPE, but it's basically it's confidence in equipment. And basically, there's a lot of times where you have to, your eye protection is going to protect you from sparks and your respirator is going to protect you from this. But if you're, do you know what to do when you're using your bandsaw and then all of a sudden you're pushing on the outsides of the, of your steel and then your steel pinches the bandsaw and it stops the bandsaw, do you know what to do? Or when you're drilling with your drill press and all of a sudden you're going too fast and it hardens the steel and then it catches and it turns into a helicopter. The confidence in what you're doing and using your head and just having a very, you know, that's why I don't want people listening, unless they're hand sanding, I don't want people listening to stuff on their iPhones because a lot of, or whatever, podcasts or whatever, because you become, you're not aware of all these little things that can happen. Like my fingertips, I goddamn hit the goddamn grinder every time with the fingertips. These are some of the things. Is confidence in equipment is just something that you can't, learn. You got to know it. And you have, and part of that is like being very mindful of like all the awful things that can happen. And then how do you deal with it? How do you adjust in midstream?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and when also
I was at the Center for Metal. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say when I was at the Center
for Metal. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah. Go ahead. Hey, man.
Hey, man. Can I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
You didn't have a question for me?
No.
You played the bumper and you didn't have the question. All right. When I was at the Center for Metal Arts back in the day, we were using a lot of the power hammers all the time. And I had to get myself terrified and say every time I stepped in front of the power hammer, you know, you get super comfortable when you're working in a lot. Like we were doing tons of pickets and just like, you know, thousands of pickets and I was making points and I was, you know, using all the dies. I had to, in my mind, repeat all the time, this thing is going to fuck you up so bad, you're never going to repair your, it's never going to get good once you get fucked up by a power hammer. And I really like grinders and all this stuff is you have to be like beyond careful.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the worst.
Yeah.
Because these insurance companies, they think that you're a knife maker, that you're going to get cut up with knives. I've had an insurance company say, well, we don't feel comfortable with you because you're around knives all the time. And I said, listen, shithead, I'm the knives are sharp for the last 5 minutes before I send them out. We're not juggling knives and throwing them at balloons on top of our heads like
speak
pirates.
For yourself.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying that like the time you're around sharp knives, these people think that you're around sharp knives all the time. And it's not, that's not the dangerous part. People don't realize that the buffer could be the most dangerous thing in your shop.
Yes.
So you just like everything, you know, and getting yourself hurt, it's just never good. Never right. good.
Did you see the videos that Alex Steele put up with the health it. And safety videos?
Oh, the safety ones. No, I saw when he was putting them together, but I haven't watched them.
I couldn't
them
do
yet.
It. I nah. won't do it. I can't do it. I mean, I understand. I'm with you, but it's like, you know, I got it. But you should watch it. You should watch it. I'm not, but you should.
just for the, you, just Alex, for the comedy he, value, if nothing else, because he uses fake arms and fake blood and fake legs. It's brilliant.
I don't want to see extra trauma. I appreciate it and I agree with it and I support it. But I'm a miserable human being. I don't need to be more miserable.
Yeah. One last thing about safety before we go. And grinders, like Jeff was just talking about, he always catches his fingertips on the grinder. If you're just getting started and you're not used to a grinder, whether it's a 2x72 or a 1x30 you got from Harbor Freight, wear gloves, because kind of the spatial awareness isn't there yet until you've had a number of hours or reps under your belt. I grind barehanded now. But I started, I almost exclusively ground with gloves on for 3 years before I did any barehanded grinding. And it's just because shit happens where you do catch the edge of a fingertip. And if you got a glove there, it's going to make contact with that glove first. It, especially with a sharp belt, it could go really fast and go straight through that glove. But ideally, it's catching that first and you react and you say, oh shit, that was getting a little too close. And right. you pay more attention.
Well, but I'd say
gloves.
If you're using a tool rest, you know, on a platen or something, you don't want to be using gloves there, because if that glove gets caught, that little tiny gap between your rest and the belt is just going to pull you down. And
that's
you're
a good
stuck.
Note.
But I that's part of confidence and equipment.
So that was never a concern. What was that?
That's confidence and equipment. When I used to forge, I had a glove on my managing hand. And I got to the point where I was like, this is all getting in my way. And it's the same thing with the grinding. When it was cold, you know, I tell you what I do like is if you're cold, is I do like those latex gloves. But in regards to gloves, I don't wear gloves because I need to kind of be, I want to feel what's going on. Like if I'm grinding a knife, I want to feel how hot it's getting so I know when to dunk it. You know, that's the confidence of equipment, because that's your confidence in what you're doing is you understand what's going to happen. You're not going to get caught in a thing. Or, you know, recently I was using the Scotch-Brite belt and I was cleaning an oyster knife and I was facing the tip upward. And the tip, you know, the Scotch-Brite belt grabbed the tip, shot it down to the ground, and put a big cut in my Scotch-Brite belt. And luckily for me, that's all it cut. And I was just like, you stupid Jesus. Son of a bitch. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know, these things happen. You got to be very aware. Be aware.
Yeah. It can be easy to lose concentration,
Yeah, for sure. Super. So that's why I don't listen to podcasts when I'm working.
Another point about the gloves is, a lot of people think it's to protect your hands from getting burned, but for me, it's about protecting them from getting cut up, because that's going to be worse than a burn, especially if you're just grinding blades. But part of the reason I say it's not for protecting from burns is because when your gloves start getting wet, because you're dipping your blade in some water to cool it down, that water makes the glove all soggy wet. When your glove is wet, that water will transfer heat faster than a dry glove.
Right.
And so,
like a wet side
sticks.
Towel in the kitchen. Yep. Don't use a wet side towel in the kitchen.
Yeah, exactly. Oof. Steam burns. They're fucking horrible.
Well, there you go.
That's it.
Hey, man, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, what's up?
Hey, man, can I ask you a question?
Can we wrap this motherfucker up?
I think we need to. So that's it for another week. So a couple of reminders. Reminder of your discount from Soul Ceramics. soulceramics.com/knifetalk. Get yourself the cheapest even heat available at the moment. Definitely. Yeah.
Nothing comes close. Soul Ceramics, they got the best deals going on right now.
And it's a promo code, right? It's Knife Talk is the promo code?
Exactly. Yeah. Stick that in at the checkout and you'll get your extra $50, because they're hugely discounted already.
Right.
Yeah. Any questions that you have for us, get them to us either on the forum, which is forum.knifetalk.net, or via Instagram, where Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. And
I have a request. Please don't DM me with your extra help questions, because I'm starting to get inundated with questions of like, hey, you were saying this. Do you think you could give me a tutorial on? Can you listen? We're going to answer all your questions. We're going to be doing this every week. We're going to put them on the thing. I'm not going to just stand around and write you a personal letter on how to do stuff. So just leave it alone.
Yeah. And use the forum. Please. There's lots of people using the forum.
Is there a specific thread on the forum that people should be asking their questions to, or they just kind of generally throw them out there?
This is the thread. It should be, leave Jeff alone. Leave me alone. That's what the thread is. Yeah. Leave me alone.
Okay. Sounds good.
There is a podcast board within the forum, so anything to do with the podcast, they can put it straight up there. But, you know, there's other people using the forum who, you know, they probably are far brighter than us. So you're going to get, you know, you're going to get opinions from others, not just us.
Lots of dick swinging.
Lots of dick swinging. But that's our show. You'll be hearing from us next week.
All right.
Thanks, everybody. Dude.